Paladin.
I'd like to read you a letter. A beautiful letter full of the most touching sentiment. Pride of its kind.
And I sincerely trust you never write one like it. But if you do, please don't leave it around, or inquisitive people like Scotland Yard may get hold of it. And the consequence is... the consequence is... This, then, is the letter. Darlingest boy, I've just come across this in a book I'm reading. It must be remembered that digitalis is a cumulative poison and that the same dose, harmless if taken once, yet frequently repeated, becomes deadly. The letter goes on. Is it any use? He puts great stress on the fact of the tea tasting bitter, as if something had been put in it, he says. Now I think whatever else I try in it will still taste bitter. He'll recognize it and be more suspicious, too. It would be so easy, darling, if I had the thing. I do hope I shall. Think out all plans and methods for me. Well, there you are. That's not all the letter, but it's a very interesting part of the letter, don't you think? It was written by Edith Thompson, a loving wife. The trouble was, she didn't love her husband. That letter was about her husband, written to the other man. Let's sample another one. This one goes on, I'm going to try the bath again occasionally. I got an electric bulb this time. So she does. Then she writes, I used the light bulb 3 times, but the 3rd time he found a piece. So I've given it up until you come home. I was buoyed up with hope of the light bulb, and I use a lot, big pieces, not powdered, and it has no effect. Well, if you've ever wondered what goes on in the mind of a murderer, there you have it. But he must have been tough, this husband of hers. He just wouldn't die. Poison, powdered, thus, no good. The stubborn brute survived them all. One night, shortly after midnight, the last train from London stopped at Ilford, letting out a few late passengers. Percy Thompson and his wife Edith, both dressed in evening clothes, were the first to give up their tickets to the collector, walk out of the station, and hurry up the road towards their home. The other passengers, a party of 4 men, followed at a more leisurely pace. It was one of those cold, damp October nights, and the street lights cast murky shadows as the 4 strolled along. They just turned a corner when suddenly...
Hear that, Tom?
Yes.
Sounded like a woman screaming.
Wonder what's up.
Well, come on, let's see.
Oh, please help me.
What's the trouble?
It's my husband. He's been hurt.
Hurt? He's bleeding.
Good.
I don't know how it happened. I saw the blood coming out of his mouth. Then he fell down. Somebody do something.
Quarter of an hour later, Detective Inspector Hall arrived on the scene. He'd been awakened out of a sound sleep by telephone message from the constable on the beat.
Sorry to disturb, Inspector, but you see why.
I most certainly do.
He's been stabbed, sir.
I see. Do you know who it is?
Yes. Name of Percy Thompson lives down the road a bit. His wife was with him when it happened. He's badly shaken. I've sent the doctor home with her.
Quite right. Not what I'd call a pleasant sight.
He says they were walking home and suddenly someone flew past them. Then her husband collapsed. You can see the trail of blood across the pavement here.
Yes, he was obviously staggering, bleeding badly.
Mrs. Thompson screamed for help. I heard her and came out to double. Some passers-by came up and I sent one man for a doctor and telephoned you. Thompson was already dead when the doctor arrived. There was nothing we could do.
Did you see anyone running from this direction?
No. I did not. Nobody came my way. There were 4 other persons who came running up when they heard the scream. I took their names and addresses, but I'm afraid they can't help much.
No running footsteps?
Not a sign, sir.
It's strange. Somebody killed this man.
I don't think it was Mrs. Thompson, sir. Her clothes were splashed with blood from where she'd been trying to help her husband. She seemed very upset.
Upset? I should think she would.
So here's the doctor coming back, sir.
Good evening, Inspector. A brutal piece of work, this.
Good evening, Doctor. I understand the man was already dead when you got here.
Yes, he must have died within a very few seconds.
Stabbed, eh?
There are 6 wounds in the back and side of the upper body. One of them cut the carotid artery in the neck. Death was very quick.
I've had a bit of a look round for the weapon, sir. But no luck so far.
It may have been thrown away in one of these gardens along here. We'll have a thorough search made in daylight.
I can tell you one thing. It was a strong hand used that night. drove it deep, right through tissue and muscle.
Done by a man, not a woman.
A strong man.
A knife is more a man's weapon, anyway. When a woman turns to murder, she uses a gun or poison. We'll see if Mrs. Thompson can give me further information when she's over her shock.
It was still early, barely daylight, when Inspector Hall called at the Thompsons' little suburban villa.
I must apologize for intruding such an hour, Mrs. Thompson, but I'm sure you understand it necessary.
Oh, it was terrible. I still don't know quite what happened, except the person's dead.
Tell me what you can, and try and remember all the details.
We were walking along together, and suddenly Percy staggered. He mumbled something.
Could you catch what it was?
No. I put my arms around him. I saw blood coming from his mouth. I couldn't hold him, and he fell down. I screamed. I could hear myself screaming. Some people came running to help. Someone got a doctor. But Percy never spoke again. And the doctor said he was dead.
Mrs. Thompson, your husband was murdered. Stabbed to death.
Murdered? But who could have done such a wicked thing?
Did your husband have any enemies? Anyone with a grievance against him?
Percy? Why, no. He was a quiet sort. Not the kind to make enemies.
You told the constable that someone flew past you just as it happened.
Did I? I forget. It was all so confusing.
Did you see anyone running away?
I don't know. I was helping Percy. There may have been someone or something that brushed past me.
Can't you remember more about it, Mrs. Thompson?
No, I don't remember. It's all a blur now. Please, Inspector, leave me alone.
So Inspector Hall considerately left Mrs. Thompson. He felt sorry for the pretty young widow. Her husband discharged from army service because of a bad heart. Had been working as a shipping clerk. Although they'd been married 8 years, Edith Thompson herself was still working as a cashier in a wholesale millinery firm. She was earning a slightly higher wage than her husband, so with their joint income, they were fairly well off. Pleasant young couple, nothing very much out of the ordinary in their lives, you say. When Inspector Hall arrived back at the police station, two persons were waiting to see him. The first was a woman who lived near the scene of the murder.
I heard the loud voices last night, and I put my head out of the window to see what was going on. I heard this woman, Mrs. Thompson. She was saying, "Don't! Oh, don't!"
Saying what?
"Don't! Oh, don't!" in a very high-pitched voice. She sounded terrified.
Perhaps she was talking to her husband.
Oh, no. It didn't sound like that. More appealing, like it. As if she was trying to stop somebody doing something. It was before she started screaming.
You're positive, that's what she said.
Oh, yes. Heard the words just carefully.
Maybe Mrs. Thompson hadn't told the inspector all she knew. The next visitor was Richard Thompson, brother of the dead man.
I don't want to make any accusations, you understand? But there are some facts I think you ought to know, Inspector. Particularly about Fred Bywater.
Bywater? Who is he?
Well, he used to be a good friend of my mother and his wife. Used to stay with them between voyages. He's a ship's steward. Didn't he just tell you about him?
No, she didn't.
I'm not exactly surprised. Well, Bywater spent a holiday with them in the Isle of Wight last year, and then went to live with them in their house at Ilford. After a while, Percy decided his wife and Bywater were getting too friendly, and there were some frightful rows. He finally pushed Bywater out of the house and told him to stay away from Edith.
Your sister-in-law didn't mention any of this to me. Perhaps that's only natural under the circumstances. Where is Bywater now?
I'm afraid I haven't the vaguest idea. I haven't seen him for months.
I think I'd like a little chat with him. Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
I want a man picked up by the name of Fred Bywater. Occupation, ship's steward. Check the shipping companies and get what information you can from them. Meanwhile, I'll have Mrs. Thompson come down here. She may be willing to help us.
Thompson? Bywater? Thompson. Enters a third character in the eternal triangle? That's what the police wanted to find out. No good jumping to conclusions. It too often happens that when a beautiful woman with a come-hither gleam in her eyes involved, the eternal triangle turns into something with as many angles to it as a cubic painting. In a case like that, start for the woman. See how she reacts.
Freddie Bywater? Why, yes, he's an old friend. I've known him since I was a child. But I haven't seen him for some time now.
I understand he used to lodge with you and your husband.
Yes. He was a nice, friendly young man. He's really only a boy.
Wasn't there some sort of a quarrel between your husband and Bywater?
Oh, you couldn't call it a quarrel. They just didn't see eye to eye.
What was the reason for this disagreement, whatever you want to call it?
I'm afraid I don't know. Some foolish little thing, probably. You know how funny men are sometimes.
Oh, then there was no good reason why Bywater's left your home so suddenly.
I don't remember anything in particular. Unless it was time for Freddy to ship out again.
Do you have any idea where he is now?
I've heard he was on leave recently, although I haven't seen him myself. I believe he ships out again very soon.
I see. Thank you, Mrs. Thompson. That's all for now. You won't mind staying on here at the station for a time yet, will you? It's just a formality. The matron will make you comfortable.
Yes, Inspector Hall's a pretty smooth customer, too. Very wise to keep a close watch on Mrs. Thompson for the time being. Until the next logical step in the investigation is complete. Until Bywater's is found. Every patrolman and detective in metropolitan London was on the lookout for this young man. He was picked up that same evening as he approached the home of the Graydon, Edith Thompson's family, and brought to the Ilford police station where Inspector Hall was waiting impatiently.
Bywater has arrived, sir.
Good, good. Bring him in.
Yes, this way, please.
What's this all about? What do you want to see me for?
Oh, just a few routine questions. I understand you knew Percy Thompson quite well. He was murdered early this morning.
I don't know anything about it.
You can account for all your movements last night?
Certainly.
By the way, you won't need your overcoat on in here. This room is fairly warm. Sergeant, take charge of Mr. Bywater's coat.
That's a nice, friendly gesture. Was to make him feel all cozy and at home. Yes, that's what Bywater thought. But the inspector had a very special reason for wanting that coat examined. He noticed a faint stain on the sleeve. He's scribbling a brief instruction to the police surgeon now.
Just a moment, Sergeant. I want you to take this note along as you go. That'll be all.
Very good, sir.
Now, Bywater, Jim, where were you last night between the hours of, say, 10 and 2?
That previous Sunday. Mrs. Thompson, I mean.
You knew the Thompsons pretty well, didn't you?
Yes, I used to live at their house when I was on leave between trips.
When did you last see Percy Thompson?
Several months ago. I left the house and went to live somewhere else.
Why did you leave?
Well, to be perfectly frank with you, Inspector, Percy got the idea that Edith and I were, well, more than just friends. It wasn't true, of course, but I didn't want to cause Edith any trouble, so I cleared off.
And has there been any more trouble since between you and Mr. Thompson?
I've had nothing to do with him since the day I left. Never seen him, never spoken to him.
I see. Hello? Inspector Hall speaking.
This is the police, Thompson. The sergeant has just brought me Bywater's overcoat and your note that has the blood stains on it. I need only a quick test, as the sergeant said you were probably in a hurry for the answer. But I can definitely state that there are blood stains on the right sleeve, as you suggested.
Thank you. Thank you. Very much.
Murder for passion. One of the oldest murders in the world. One usually thinks of such crimes as happening on the spur of the moment. But it isn't so. I say that in most cases a great deal of careful planning comes before the actual murder. I look at Edith Thompson. Young, attractive, bored with a sick husband, she turns to Frederick Bywater's great excitement. And having decided he's the man she really wants, she must get rid of her husband. But separation or divorce won't do. She's selfish, greedy, ambitious. She wants to keep her tidy little house and possessions, her job, her position as a respectable woman. She's not going to lose all these things for love of any man, not she. But her slow, persistent attempts to kill off her husband failed in time. She felt time was fighting against her. She was older, much more experienced than young Bywater's, and for the time being, he was completely under her control. But how long did she keep him there? She might lose him if she didn't hurry up and dispose of her husband. I can imagine Bywater's getting impatient, urging her to let him use a more direct, cruder method. Just let me stick a knife into him some dark night. Nobody will ever know. The outline of the case is now becoming clear to Scotland Yard.
You know, Sergeant, I'm convinced there is some sort of guilty conspiracy between Mrs. Thompson and Bywater. I haven't the ghost of a chance of proving it, so far. Has any word come in from Inspector Page? You went to search Bywater's set?
Not yet, sir. We ought to be here soon.
Now, let's take this timetable of Bywater's movements last night. It looks perfectly straightforward on the stage, but there may be something more in it.
How do you mean, sir?
Well, Bywater says he left the Graydon's home soon after 11 o'clock and went straight home by way of the city, Strand, Westminster, and Victoria. When he got to Victoria, the last train for Upper Norwood was already gone, and he had to walk for 5 or 6 miles home because he didn't have the cab there.
Sounds plausible to me, sir. And the Graydon's have confirmed the time he left their house.
I know. But why didn't he start home earlier? After 11, train connection to Upper Norwood was a bit tricky. Look here, look at this railway map. Now, put your finger on Manor Park.
Yes, sir, I've got it.
Good. Now tell me, what is the next station east of Manor Park?
Ilford.
Well?
Ilford? Why, bless me, so sir, that's where the Thompsons live.
Exactly. Supposing that when Bywater's left Manor Park, he was intending to go not home, as he said, but to Ilford, the next stop. Suppose he knew the Thompsons had gone to London and were getting back to Ilford about midnight. Suppose he intended to be there himself when they arrived at the station. Then, by staying on at the Graydon till after 11, he establishes what he thinks is an alibi, and so leaves himself plenty of time to do the short journey to Ilford and lie in wait for Percy Thompson.
That's a clever bit of reasoning, if I may say so, sir.
Hello? Inspector Hall speaking.
This is Page, here. We've just finished searching Bywater's room, and we've cut buried treasure. Found a bundle of love letters in a suitcase. They're from Edith Thompson.
A very foolish young man, this Fred Bywater. Very foolish. He not only gets involved with a married woman, but he even keeps her letters. Letters full of loving words for him and plans of death for an unsuspecting husband.
Listen to this one, boy. Yes, darling, be jealous. So much so that you'll do something desperate. He has the right by law to all you have the right to by nature and love. I hate every lie I have to tell to see you.
This letter here is full of newspaper clippings. It reports cases of persons dying from poison. Look at them. And listen to this. I'm going to try the glass again occasionally. I've got an electric light bulb this time.
Oh, what a fiendish mind that woman must have.
One of the most devilish sluts to get rid of a man I've ever come across. And by his own wife, too. Listen, there's a possible lead in this one. Don't forget what we talked about in the tea room. I will still risk it and try it if you will, darling.
Couple of sweet young things, aren't they? Woman's the worst of the two, if you ask me.
Yeah, but I wonder where that tea room is and what they talked about. I'd like to find out. We haven't got enough evidence yet to charge them with murder, but I'll break this case wide open and see they both get what they deserve.
It was well after midnight when Inspector Hall finished reading those letters. He'd been working on the case for over 24 hours without a break, and he climbed wearily into bed with the satisfactory feeling of a job well begun. But at Edith Thompson and Fred Bywater's, were they sleeping or lying awake, thinking? Mrs. Thompson didn't know that Bywater had been detained at the police station and was only a few rooms away from her. She thought he was safely aboard ship, ready to sail to the Far East in the next few hours. She didn't know that her letters to him had been discovered. She thought there might be a few awkward moments ahead of her before she could convince the police she knew nothing about her husband's murder. But she could do it, so much depended on it, and then she'd have everything she wanted. Yes, I think Edith Thompson was uneasy, but confident she could get away with it. During the next day, events moved swiftly. In a small cafe near the London office where Mrs. Thompson worked, a police sergeant is interviewing this waitress.
Mrs. Thompson? Oh, yes, I know. Well.
Does she usually come in here alone?
No. She often has a friend with her. Nice young man. Very good looking.
And you happen to know who he is?
Well, no. They don't know his name. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I remember. Oh, you're crazy. That's fine, that's you.
Have they been anywhere together recently?
Oh, yes, they came here for tea just the other day.
Were they, by any chance, the day before yesterday? The 3rd of October, that would be.
Well, that's the day I'm wrong. I haven't seen him since.
Thank you. You've been most helpful.
I should think he has. Meantime, the ship on which Bywater has been intending to sail at noon is loading last minute stores. Please, Arbuckle, came on board to search the quarters used by Bywater. In his kitty box of love letters to Mrs. Something, Desmond has spoke of plans for happiness with one man, plans of death to another. Yes, so far the piece had been 100% successful. But there was one thing they couldn't find. The murder weapon. Neither in Bywater's room nor aboard ship. However, several of his shipmates declared that for many months the Youngs carried a sheath knife. Inspector Hall was feeling very confident when he again interviewed the Thompson.
Are you positive there's nothing more you can answer that you already told us, Mrs. Thompson?
Nothing, Inspector.
Yes. Miss Jane gets a feeling. Did that pass you when your husband was murdered?
All I remember is feeling someone there. It was dark and we went under the streetlight. I was too busy trying to help cross traffic. It all happened so quickly.
And you still maintain that you haven't seen Fred Bywater for some time?
Not for several months.
I see.
Inspector Hall wasn't telling Mrs. Thompson about the evidence he'd gathered against her. No, of course not. But he had another idea that might break down her stubborn refusal to talk. Walking along the corridor with her, he stopped before a glass panel door. In the room inside, Bywater was sitting before the fire, talking to two uniformed policemen.
Mrs. Thompson, look through the glass panel of that door, will you, and tell me who you see in there.
Yes, sir?
Yes.
Oh, Freddy, he's got you. Oh, why did he do it? Why didn't he do it?
Mrs. Thompson, I must warn you to be very careful of what he says. Come in, Miss Otis, here. There, sit down. Now, take a moment or two to collect your thoughts. When you are ready to talk, what you say will be taken down in writing and made to use in evidence. You ready, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. All ready.
I'm shocked, baby. I never expected it from everyone. I thought he was safe aboard his ship by now and gone.
We know quite a bit more about this whole affair than you realize, Mrs. Thompson. I think you would be wise to tell us the truth, the whole truth.
Yes. I didn't think it was Fred. It never occurred to me until you started asking questions about him. How did you find out?
I have no intention of answering any questions. I want your story.
All right, I'll tell you. Fred did it. He rushed out from an alley and started to struggle with Percy. Percy fell down and Freddy ran away. That's all.
You admit you're in love with Frederick Bywater?
Yes, I am. I mean, I was. But I didn't have anything to do with the murder. That was all Freddy's idea. He did it. He killed my husband.
They say confession is good for the soul. What of the soul of Edith Thompson? This woman, still thinking only of herself, who was now willing to sacrifice even the man she loved because of her own selfish life. And Fred Bywater, false friend, wife stealer, murderer that he was, one can't help pitying him in a way. This woman had such a hold on him that would you believe it, even after she turned on him, tried to shuffle off all the guilt of the crime onto his shoulders. The crime, mind you, she probably was the first of his own. Even after he'd done all that, he was still so madly infatuated with her, he tried to take all the blame.
Edith had nothing to do with her husband's death, Inspector. I killed him. We were in love and I wanted to marry Edith. But Percy wouldn't give her a divorce.
When did you decide to marry?
I didn't mean to. It just happened. Edith said they were going up to town to see a show. And I thought I'd wait at the station and talk to Percy again when he got back. I asked him again to let Edith divorce him. But he was too late. He was in a frightful temper, and he struck me. I struggled with him, and I must have lost my head. I pulled out my knife and hit him several times. And I got scared and ran away. Edith had nothing to do with it, I tell you. It was all my fault. I was only trying to defend myself.
What did you do with the knife?
I threw it down a drain in the road. Went home.
Edith Thompson and Frederick Bywater went on trial at the Old Bailey. Bywater stuck to his story that he had killed in self-defense and that his lady love was not responsible. You can imagine the sensation in court when the Crown Prosecutor began to read the love letters he had written. 72 in all. Coldly and deliberately, Sir Thomas Inskip, K.C., read out those burning words of passion to prove that for months Edith Thompson had been planning the brutal murder of her husband. The verdict? Guilty.